Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children. Hello and welcome back. Victoria isn't able to join us for this episode, but she'll be back with us next time. And I know she'll be just as interested in today's conversation as I am. Today, we're talking about something that so many families are navigating right now. Emotionally based school avoidance, anxiety, and what's really going on underneath the surface when a child simply cannot attend school. And I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Caroline Sutton. Caroline is a psychotherapist, author, and former NHS specialist nurse with over 37 years of experience supporting children and families. She brings not only deep clinical knowledge, but also lived experience as a neurodivergent parent, which means she truly understands this journey from both sides. Through her private practice, writing and public speaking, Caroline helps parents and professionals look beyond behaviour and see the emotional and neurological roots of distress. Her work is grounded in compassion and clarity, helping families rebuild safety, trust and hope, both in education and at home. Welcome to the podcast, Caroline. It's great to have you with us here today. Can you start by telling us what inspired you to write your book on emotionally based school avoidance, and how did your personal and professional experiences shape it?
Good morning, Natalie. Thank you so much for inviting me to the podcast. It's brilliant to be able to talk about this subject that I'm so passionate about. So what inspired me to write a compassionate guide to anxiety related to school is that I have met so many parents and so many young people who were really struggling with this issue. And I became aware that it is an issue that is really complex. However, it's very misunderstood and there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a real lack of understanding and empathy for young people and for parents who find themselves in this situation. And what I was seeing is parents who are at their wits' end, they don't know where to turn, they don't know how to help their child. They may be being criticised or even penalised by the education system, being fined for the child not attending school and being criticised by school, by friends, by relatives, sometimes in a well-meaning way, by people not understanding and treating this as if it's a behavioural issue. And what I've found in my work increasingly is actually that this isn't behavioural. This isn't about being stricter with your child. It isn't about bribing them to go to school or praising them when they do manage to go. It's about understanding that this is about a young person's nervous system, that this is a response to an environment that doesn't appear safe. And I really wanted to get that message out there because through working as a therapist with young people, what I recognised was that maybe the more traditional approach of, oh, we just need to deal with the anxiety a little bit like it's a phobia of school, was actually unhelpful. And actually what that did was that increased the young person's sense of guilt and the family's sense of isolation. So what I found is that by really understanding what's going on in these young people's brains and using a compassionate, kind response based in neuroscience and based on the understanding that this is actually a brain-based issue.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I've heard of parents who have been told, just make your home environment less appealing. So take away their electronics or the things that they like doing at home, and then they'll want to go to school. And it's just not that simple, is it?
It absolutely isn't. It isn't based on the traditional rules of that people think about behaviour. What I find is that the majority of the young people that I see are neurodivergent. It may have been recognised that they have autism or ADHD, or it may become clear as they're working with me. But again, I think when we are parenting young people, as we know, and I'm the parent of a young man with a complex learning disability and autism, so I know very well how it feels as a parent to be blamed sometimes, for people to think that they know better. And I also know that when you are neurodivergent, your brain does respond differently to certain environments, and certain environments can be very overwhelming. And actually bribing a young person to go back into, or forcing a young person to go back into an environment that is overwhelming for their sensory system, for their nervous system, actually is not helpful. But that view can be quite challenging. People can find the view quite challenging. And I think as parents, it's really important that we support each other with this situation. What I was seeing was parents coming to me and wanting me to see their children for therapy. And actually, I didn't have enough hours in the day, in the week, to meet the demand. And so what inspired me again to write the book was I thought, I want to share this information more widely. I want people to understand and to be able to maybe pass a copy of my book to family and friends and teachers and educators, and people to start to really understand that we need to manage this differently.
Yeah, that's such a good idea, because it really does need a lot more understanding, especially from professionals, I think, too. So yeah, that's great that you've got that.
Yeah. Thank
you. So for those who aren't familiar with the term EBSA, how would you explain what it really means, and why is it so often misunderstood as defiance or school refusal?
Yeah, really good question. So EBSA stands for emotionally based school avoidance. Personally, I think that the term avoidance is misleading, because to me, avoidance implies a kind of a willful act, a conscious decision to avoid school. So I would prefer emotionally based barriers to school. But basically what it stands for is a young person who becomes fearful of attending school, and due to a response in their nervous system perceives this as an unsafe environment. And it can present in a number of different ways. It can happen initially with maybe a young person saying, I don't want to go to school today, or I've got a tummy ache, maybe not sleeping on a Sunday evening when they're going back to school, maybe after the school holidays. And some young people will tolerate going to school but come home exhausted and absolutely burnt out. And some young people will completely stop going to school when it's got to the point when basically their brain just tells them that they can't do it anymore.
Yeah. And from your work with families, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about anxiety and school avoidance in young people?
I think that, as I alluded to earlier, I've heard people talking about, we can't let them stop going to school or they'll never go back. We can't, and we must make the home environment unpleasant, and again, that will help them to go back. Actually, that's counterintuitive. This isn't a child choosing, a young person choosing to not go to school. This is a young person's brain saying that environment is unsafe. And to me, it's really wrong for us to encourage a young person to ignore those signals. The signals in our brains that are saying this is an unsafe environment, we need to be encouraging those in children. They need to know what feels safe and what doesn't feel safe. So it's really counterintuitive to say school feels unsafe, but you need to keep going. I think that's not about me saying they must never return to school, but it's about saying we need to work out what is it in the school environment, what is it in that particular environment that is causing this. And it's very individual. So for some children, it can be noise, it can be uncertainty, particularly when they get into year seven and they transition into high school. There's so many different things to deal with during the school day. There's friendships, there's noise, there's smells, there's change of teacher, change of classroom. In a school day, they might have six different teachers, all who have different personalities, who have different rules. Now, for a young person with a neurodivergent brain, that's a lot of change. And that can in itself just basically mean that the nervous system is on high alert all day, trying to manage those changes and trying to work out what's happening, how they need to behave. Then there's friendship issues. There's all sorts of things. There can be things like the sensory issue around wearing a school uniform that's uncomfortable. So there's a lot of things we need to take into account. And for some young people, there are adjustments that can be made that make the difference, that mean that they can continue to attend school or go back to school. And that's brilliant. And I think that's something absolutely I would encourage. But it needs to be dealt with on an individual young person basis and looking at what's right for them and what can be changed within the environment. And I think that sometimes schools are quite wary of making these changes or making these concessions. And schools, I think, feel they have a lot of pressure on them, maybe from Ofsted, from the government, to meet targets, to meet attendance targets. But I think that if a child has poor mental health, if a child feels, if their brain feels in a state of crisis, they're not going to be able to learn anyway. If you put me in a cage full of lions and then ask me to recite my times table, I'm not going to be able to do it because my brain's going to be on high alert, scanning for the danger. And it might seem to us as adults, what's dangerous about a school? But the brain perceives it to be a threat because there are things happening at school that are maybe out of that young person's control that are unexpected, that are very difficult for them to respond to. So it is complex and it does need an individualized, skilled approach. And I think parents really need good advocates, people who are supporting them. And some schools can do it well, some teachers do it well, but it can work for some young people. But other young people, it might be about looking at a different environment. So it might be that a mainstream school, or in my son's case, my son went to special school, but he struggled even in a special school with 2-to-1 support. It was too much for his nervous system. There was too much stimulus there. I know I keep coming back to the word individual approach, but there's a concept of ideas around looking at the environment, but then we have to look at how does that young person respond. For one young person that I come to see me at one point, myself and her mum thought, we'll just say, could she just go in the morning and come home in the afternoon? But actually, that young person was horrified about that because people would be saying to her, why are you not here in the afternoon? And that was as stressful as not being there. So that's why. But for another young person who I see, she's really happy with that. And that means that she can sustain going to school. So that's what I mean again about looking at what does that young person need at that stage in their life.
And as a parent, I think it can be really difficult to know how much to encourage them in and when not to. And so, what would be one key message that you would give to parents supporting a child who's struggling to attend?
Yeah, and I think that's really hard, isn't it? And I remember being that parent and being desperate for my son to go to school. And I look back and I cringe because I think, oh, I was desperate for a break because his care needs were really high. So I'd want him to go to school. But actually, he was telling me really clearly that he couldn't do it. So what I want to say to parents is please never think that I'm criticizing you or judging you if you are encouraging your child into school, because I know that it has an impact. It has an impact on your ability to work, your ability to carry on with the rest of your life. So it's really difficult. But I think it's looking for signs and subtle signs. So it's checking in with your young person. What are they saying? Are they saying that I don't want to go in this morning because certain things happening? Is that something we can change? Is it that once they get out of the car and they're into the school, they're all right? It's that transition anxiety. So again, it's looking at what's going on, but also monitoring really closely. How are they when they come home from school? Are they withdrawn? Are they exploding? One of my young people, she has to go to her bedroom after school because she's worried that she's going to attack her siblings. And she doesn't want to attack her siblings, but she feels so heightened. So it's looking at what are the signs? What's your young person showing you? If they're coming out of school and they're happy and relaxed and they're able to have a conversation with you, play with their siblings, carry on with their hobbies, then everything's okay. But if you're seeing signs of them withdrawing from other areas of their lives, things that they enjoy, I would be really careful about forcing them to continue to go to school or even encouraging them. Because what you're seeing is a young person who is getting to the stage of burnout. And that's something, again, that I see quite frequently in teenagers, but also in younger children. I've got a 10-year-old at the moment who I'm seeing who's in a position of burnout. And once young people do become burnt out, it can take quite a long time to recover. Obviously, I'm a therapist, I'm a nursing background. I'm always going to come down on the side of the brain and the nervous system and mental health because I believe that we can't learn anyway if we're in a state of stress, if our mental health's poor. And I know that's not an educationalist view, but I can only give what I think. So I would just say be really careful. The other thing I would say is that this won't go on forever. And the more your child trusts that you are on their side, that you are there, that you will listen, that you will understand, the more you will be able to help them and the sooner they will adjust. And what I see with parents is when they're in the middle of it, and I was the same, they just feel like this is forever and they really worry about their child's future. Are they going to get an education? Are they going to get any qualifications? And I can really understand that, but I guess I have the benefit of having been through that situation and come out the other end, and also seeing families, seeing young people who I've been working with for 3 or 4 years who are now thriving. And it's knowing that this is not forever. But also, if we can teach our young person to understand their nervous system, to understand their brain, to not have to mask all the time, then actually we're giving them skills that will carry them through for the rest of their lives and stop them from being burnt out adults. Because I also see autistic adults who are burnt out by their work situations. So to me, it's about becoming more emotionally intelligent, more tuned into children's emotions and what's going on in the brain.
Yeah, that's really good advice. One of the frustrating things is it seems to be that a lot of children are needing to get to that burnout stage before they get the help. And it would
Yes.
be really good if it was recognised a lot earlier by parents, by professionals, and then we could all work together to prevent it getting so bad
Exactly. Exactly
in the
that,
first
Natalie.
place.
Yeah,
Yeah.
completely. And even GPs.
Yeah.
I think it's not being recognised by GPs. The waiting list for CAM service is so long that there's very little help out there and support to recognise this.
So, what gives you hope for the future for these young people and for the education system that supports them?
So what gives me hope is that I see young people who really struggled at school, who maybe even didn't go to school for a couple of years, who are thriving, who are turning into wonderful young adults, who are aware of their emotions, who are recovering from what happened at school, and who are hopefully going to be able to teach the world a different way of viewing this. And some of the young people that I see, actually, a couple of them are really committed to working to support other young autistic people in that situation because they feel so strongly about what they've been through. So what I would absolutely say is if you're a parent in the midst of this, don't give up. Don't think this is forever. Always have hope. Don't let anybody take away your hope. It will be okay. And there are lots of different ways of getting education and getting into work. And it's not one size fits all. And isn't that the brilliance of those of us? I'm neurodivergent, and those of us who have neurodivergent brains, and is actually that we think differently. And I really believe that the world needs people who think differently, who are more sensitive, who are very empathetic. So, again, I really discourage people from saying, oh, my child's too shy, they're too sensitive. It's actually, we need to turn it on its head and say, is the environment safe? Does the person feel safe? And not blame it on the young person.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Thank you. And what is one change that you would like to see in the world to make it more inclusive for neurodivergent families?
I would like awareness and understanding. I think if people are aware and they understand, then there's less judgment. Judgment is so harmful. And I've been that parent, and I still am sometimes. My son's 22, but there's still times when I know people judge and they think they could do it better than me. And that's up to them, but it does hurt. It hurts when you're trying your best to manage a really difficult situation. So, my book title is Compassion. I believe in kindness, in empathy, and compassion. And I just think be compassionate. You don't know what's going on for that person, that family. If you're not sure, ask. And I think the people who've helped me the most have said, I don't know, how can I help? And
Yeah.
that's something I think I've learned again is that don't assume, but just say, is there anything I can do to help if you're supporting a family in this situation and to listen. But yes, so to come back to your question, I think it would be a more accepting, a kinder society that accepts differences and embraces differences.
I love that. Yeah, I totally agree with that one. And you mentioned your book, which is A Compassionate Approach to School Anxiety,
Yes.
which is out soon. And we'll put the link in the show notes to where you can get a copy.
Thank you.
It's a really supportive read with lots of helpful information, which I highly recommend.
Oh, thank you.
And you also have a free gift for our listeners. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that is the return to school checklist. I wrote a guide to help parents prepare their children if they've had some time off school. I know it can be really difficult after the school summer holidays, even after the 2 weeks holidays at Easter. There's some ideas about things like checking their uniform, that the fabrics are comfortable, that they're soft, reminding your young person about the positives, what they like about school. Because I know myself, if I haven't been somewhere for a couple of weeks, I can feel quite anxious about it. So it's reminding them what's the positive about it. What do you like? What was good from last year? Also, if they're going to a new school or a new setting, it's about maybe practicing the journey beforehand, getting the timetable early, talking about things. Also, let them talk about their worries. Let them keep a worry journal or a digital note and agree a set time when you're going to talk about the worries together. But don't allow that to be the whole conversation. So balance that and say, okay, we've talked about that and that's really hard. Let's talk about something that's positive, something that you're looking forward to. So there's a few other bits as well in there. Stay calm and supportive. I know that's really hard as parents, and I think it's really stressful for us. And everybody talks about our nervous systems needing to be regulated and for our children to be regulated. But there's times when it's really frustrating and we're juggling lots of different things. And I think as well, it's about being kind to yourself as a parent and knowing that this is tough.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds really good. We'll definitely be checking that out. Thank you. And Caroline, you also have a membership group for parents on Facebook where you have resources and lives. And we'll also put a link to that in the show notes too, so people can check that out.
Thank you. Yeah, I just started that because, again, it was a way of reaching more parents and providing a close supportive community where I can actually come on and parents can ask me questions directly, have some group coaching with me, and there's also some support from other parents there. But it's on Facebook. However, it's a private group, so nobody else can see it and you have to be invited to it.
That's brilliant. Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.